This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's always great to have you with us.
It's always great to be here. These are exciting times that we live in.
Certainly are. Let's start with the presidential trail. Newt Gingrich is in. Mitt Romney trying to do a little explaining this week. Let's start with the former House Speaker after a couple of what seemed like likely runs for the presidency. This time he's finally in. It seems like the first thing that the left-leaning media is after, though, is his personal life, which is kind of odd considering their track record in the past. But how big of an issue do you expect that to be, primarily with Republican voters, and how do you expect Gingrich to try and get around it?
Not as big an issue as one would think, Greg. The fact is that Newt Gingrich has been a national figure for a long time. People know that he has been married and divorced twice, that his wife is his third wife, and this is something that he has addressed in the past. Unless there's something more to the story than has been reported or he has discussed, I doubt it will come up again. Again, as a candidate, I believe his problem more is the fact that he was very controversial as Speaker. He left under a cloud when Republicans nearly lost their control of the House in 1998. And as tremendously articulate as he is, and probably full of more good ideas by breakfast than most people are in a year, he is going to be a bit incendiary. Another factor, Newt Gingrich is 69 years old and has been around a long time. Many believe his time has passed. Then again, when one looks at the field, perhaps nobody's time has passed.
John, that leads me right into where you think he stacks up in the likely field with the Romneys, the possible Mitch Daniels, Tim Pawlenty, maybe Mike Huckabee. Where do you think a Newt Gingrich lines up in there?
He's going to be formidable because he is well-liked by a lot of grassroots activists. He raised a lot of money for a lot of folks over the years. On the other hand, I go back to my original point. He's been around for a while. He's the same age Ronald Reagan was when he was elected president. And Reagan had a little bit more durability than Gingrich and was a little less controversial, shall we say. His enemy may be familiarity and the desire for a new face. I have a feeling he's strong, but not as strong as one would think against a Pawlenty or a Mitch Daniels or a Chris Christie or someone who's relatively a new kid on the block.
John, in 2010, Republican voters seem to not want to have much to do with folks who have been around a long time. Do you think that's going to translate to the presidential race as well?
Yes. Democrats propose on the first date, while Republicans historically want a long courtship, sometimes a lover's quarrel before they say, I do. I have a feeling that the Republican nominee, whoever he or she may be, will be more like an Adlai Stevenson, Jack Kennedy, Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, or Barack Obama than previous nominees. The desire for a fresh face is very clear, not someone whose turn it's been.
All right, let's move on to Mitt Romney now. He's likely to throw his hat in the ring again. He's already launched the Exploratory Committee, and on Thursday he was speaking at the University of Michigan, trying to, on the one hand, defend what his health care plan did in Massachusetts, while at the same time saying the first thing he would do is repeal the president's health care plan. Both require individual mandates, and some say there's a lot of similarities. Romney would beg to differ, and he'll also say that it's a big difference because it should be up to the states what the health care system is, not up to the federal government. Our Republican primary voter is going to buy it.
It's going to take a little work, but I think they will as they listen to him. First, remember, the decisions on Romney care, for lack of a better word, were made by a Republican governor facing an overwhelmingly Democratic legislature. He can make a strong and truthful case that a lot of the things he wanted in his health care proposal were rejected or twisted by his opponents in the legislature, who nonetheless recognized that reform was needed. Two, he makes a good point that what he did was at the state level. And this is something Obamacare takes not one iota into consideration. It's one size fits all. One cannot, for example, even get health care across state lines. And if it were turned over to the state with a lot of relaxation that comes when state government administers things, the program might be a bit better. That said, the fact that Barack Obama has quoted him so often and cited his plan as an inspiration, it's going to take a lot of work to turn that back. I'll say this, he'll have a lot of practice because he's going to hear questions about it at every stop.
John, let's look at the larger picture now. President Obama seeming to either enjoy a very slight or, depending on the poll, a very significant increase in temporary approval ratings as a result of the successful killing of bin Laden. He's certainly not failing to mention that at virtually every stop along the way, as I would imagine any incumbent president would do. He's also using this afterglow time frame to push his immigration agenda, which wouldn't seem to have much chance of passing the current Congress. So what do you make of the president's strategy right now?
Well, it's a good strategy. If George W. Bush or anyone were president at the time bin Laden was finally taken out, they would gain from it politically, as they should. But again, and this has been pointed out frequently, a lot of leaders do very well on the foreign front in one year, only to be defeated in the next. Winston Churchill is a case in point. The elder George H.W. Bush after Desert Storm is another. In the end, it will depend on how many lines there are waiting to get unemployment or how many job roles there are, new jobs created, that will determine the fate of Barack Obama in 2012. Not what he did at this point, something I believe all Americans should salute him for.
So this can give him a little nudge towards the finish line, but it can't drag him over.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on to the bigger issue now, and that's the economy. John Boehner, the House Speaker this week, addressing the Economic Club of New York and saying point blank that a clean raising of the debt ceiling is just not going to happen. He's not even willing to do so for billions of dollars in cuts. He says it's got to be trillions. How well do you think the speaker is going to be able to honor that promise?
Well, I think he's going to have to be able to come to the White House with that or no deal, for the simple reason that more than one-third of the Republican ranks that Speaker Boehner leads were elected last fall. Of the 87 Republican freshmen, a handsome majority of them were elected as proud Tea Partiers, who will not just allow a clean raise on the debt ceiling, but want something in return. I've interviewed a number of the freshmen for Human Events' Meet the Members feature, and they all say they do not want to vote to raise the debt ceiling unless, as Congressman Mick Mulvaney of South Carolina put it, we get a cultural change, a quantum change. Now, what that means, we're not sure, and whether that $2 trillion comes over 10 years or immediate is going to be very critical to the package the speaker goes to the president with. But I'd say that Boehner is just voicing what a number of those he has to listen to every day are saying.
John, real quick follow-up before we let you go. It seems to me that when I was talking with members of Congress prior to the continuing resolution vote, they're always very skittish about saying that, well, if we don't get something we like, we'll not vote for it and we'll let the government shut down. Now if you ask them if they're willing to not raise the debt ceiling if they don't get what they want, they seem to be much more ready to pull the trigger on that. Do you agree?
Yes, I certainly do. I think that, as Congressman Tom Graves of Georgia told me, governing is a little bit different from campaigning. When one realizes what would happen if the debt ceiling were not raised, that is, the U.S. defaulting on many of its financial commitments, its credit rating being lowered, hyperinflation possibly rising if more bills have to be printed by the presses, it's a very risky game. On the other hand, one has to play a risky game in order to get some action on spending cuts, spending caps, and eventually the goal of a balanced budget.
John, we'll have to leave it there for this week. As always, we appreciate your time.
Waiting patiently for the big vote, which may be the most important vote of any of these members' careers, I'm John Gizzi on Capitol Hill.
John Gizzi is political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.